All right. I want to add something. I know from when we were arguing about these issues for many years, you generally would have PDs and GMs not advertise adequately enough for any kind of the governance events. In my experience, you need to have at least 30 promos of an event a week on the air at various times. That's SOP for radio, to have people come. That generally doesn't happen with any of these kind of events. So that's one of the problems. The second problem is that the issue of live events is not only the town hall idea, but also events where people meet each other. And, of course, with the COVID crisis going on, it's difficult to do. But in New York, we have lacked space for years to have actual events like a radio-free music store or any kind of lecture events. When we were doing this, when I was the chair of the CAB in New York, we had an event on Ferguson. We had 120 people come. That was downstairs at 388 Atlantic Avenue. So the need for live events and have interaction with our listeners, not only with town halls, but with topical issues of the day in live events, is very important, I think. And that's something we should all do in every station, if we can get away with it now, if we get through this COVID-19 mess. In any event,
That's so true, because we at Justice and Unity, we were doing some town hall meetings as well, talking about the station. But that was in the community when the community was at rest and not COVID unfriendly. But I'm sure that'll start back up again, you know?
We have to do outreach, and we have to also, the criticism of the lack of social media, I've been beating that drum for 15 to 16 years. So basically, Pacifica stations have varying levels of integration into social media, but we're still essentially back in the Paleolithic age when it comes to integration of what we should be doing. We should have been on the cutting edge. We're still in the back of the room someplace on this issue, and that's inexcusable, particularly nowadays with the money issue so bad. Anyway, so let's go to the next motion. Nancy, what's the next motion you want to talk about?
Okay, let's see. Well, we've sort of covered number four and number six. The town hall, a PNB town hall on the air. That took place about 2 weeks ago. Hardly anybody knew it on the West Coast or even here in Houston. Yeah, we did do part of it, but we didn't do the public comment. And I think that's a pretty good one to do. That way we get information from the national directors and then open up the telephone lines for all across Pacifica. It wasn't promoted enough, and it was the first time they tried it, but I think that's a way to do it. And about live events, what you just said about live events, some kind of entertainment, because people cannot take so much, governance all at one time in a big dosage. But, I mean, allow people who have been auditioned by the programmers, some up-and-coming, singers or stand-up comics or talented instrumentalists, let them debut on our meetings. That makes people want to come to the meetings more.
Right.
Okay, you want me to...
Well, why don't you go to the next one, then we'll talk about both of them at once. Go on. Go to the next one.
Let's see. To post the LSB meetings, the report to the listeners on the kpfdx.org, as well as the town hall meetings, and the GM report, which is part of the Pacifica General Manager job description, is supposed to do a report. Half the time is for call-ins, and... I don't know if any of the stations, if their GMs are even doing that, but that's in their job description. So that should also be on kpfdx.org. So callers can know that they can, sign up to get these automatic reminders that Otis sends out, and they could, find out, be able to ask their general manager what's going on.
Okay. What comments on that issue? Report of the managers to the listenership. Anybody have an opinion on that?
Well, I do know at DAI it has been done. It's not done as often as it should be.
Your report to the listeners?
All right.
But they do it from time to time.
Right. Right. Like my attitude about report to the listeners is it has to be a regularly established routine. It generally is done as a Potemkin village type tactic by general managers. They generally don't like to, you know, they're Potemkin village. That's basically, they will do it as a flim-flam operation to basically, you know, when I've seen, reports to the listeners from general managers, they generally pick strategic points where they want to talk to listeners about an issue, and they tend to want to avoid talking to listeners, in particular if they're under a lot of criticism. And from what I understand, a lot of stations don't have reports to the listeners, period. And I don't know what goes on in the Bay Area. I don't know what goes on in Los Angeles. But I know that, you know, you really need to get the general managers and the PDs in a situation where they're reporting to the listenership, even if you have people coming in who will stage essentially, you know, four or five people will make a phone call because they want to make a certain point. Well, that goes with the turf. You just got to accept that. And that's Pacifica. That's life. So I personally think that all the general managers and PDs at every station should regularly have to report to their listener members on some frequent basis, not when they desire it, but they have to do it as a part of their service to the public.
Request for information?
Yeah.
Can the chair ask, the pro tem chair ask the different station, are they doing? Is their GM doing a report? Is their LSB doing a report on the air? Are they doing town hall meetings? I mean, can we get a little bit of a report
all right,
here?
All right. Janine, do you know what goes on at KPFA? Could you share with us what goes on at KPFA in this issue?
Well, in terms of the general manager report back, we just got one at our last meeting. We're in June last month. But as far as it going on the air, I'm not aware of anything like that happening. I've never heard of the program director giving a report to listeners. But we have it. We have the recording from the meeting. I mean, we could do it. But are you talking about live, something live?
Yes.
Listeners could call in? Okay.
Yeah. That's been happening in New York on and off for decades, that kind of stuff. So that doesn't happen in Berkeley, from your knowledge?
No. And he was even kind of pulling teeth just to get him to come to our meeting.
I heard about that. All right. At KPFT, does that happen down there in Texas?
Well, not for 3 years.
Okay. All right, so that sort of answers the question there. We don't have anybody from PFW, so we can't get any sense of Washington. Does anybody know what goes on in Washington before I ask some other signal area? I don't know.
They have
go
an
on,
LSB
go on.
11 to 2 p.m., Monday through Friday, and Ron Pinchback is the host.
They have an LSB show?
Well, it's called Community Watch, and so he's a board member, and he has other board members, and then they sort of have board members come on and tell what they're doing, like their outreach or their fundraiser or whatever.
Okay. But they don't have a GM. They don't have a GM or PD formal report to the listener, or do
that
they?
I don't know if that person comes out on that show or not. I'm not listening to that show every time, so I don't know.
Okay. What about KPFK? Do you guys have anything like that happen there with a report to the general manager and listener from the PD? Does that kind of stuff go on in Los Angeles?
This is Michelle. We struggle sometimes with our communication with management and for various reasons. And no, we don't have an on-air report from the LSB. Perhaps Oscar, who has been involved on the board level longer than I have, could offer more background on why.
I'm just kind of laughing to the idea of, no, that's definitely, especially on our side, our current, both current managers and programmers are really, really reluctant to come up, not even to the regular LSB, meetings where they're supposed to be or they were programmed to be. So, imagine they're trying to figure out a report from them. Definitely is not happening.
Right. All right. Look, I know in New York I've had arguments with a general manager to go on the air, and I always say to him, look, this is ridiculous, man. Just go on and take the shit, and, you know, that's it. You know, just do it. So I've had many conversations about him over the years about this issue, and you're talking to one of the people who would force him to do it. But anyway, all right, let's go on to the next motion.
He does go on. He does go on.
But he doesn't go on as often as he should, Sharon. Bert Bolt should go on a lot more often.
He's also going on some, and according to some of these stations that you're talking to, he's going on much more often than they are going on. But the thing is that he does go on. Now, part of the problem in terms of him going on and some of these other things that are on this list is that our staff is so short in terms of personnel. Right. That I imagine it's difficult when you're doing a number of various things, and I'm sure a lot of you all stations are short-staffed as well. So we need to figure out, I imagine, how to do all of this stuff and become another body so that you can get this stuff done. Because you need additional people. You need additional volunteers. You need additional people to do some of this stuff, to help with the planning and the organizing.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Is there any other questions on this or comments? Or else we'll move on to the next motion.
Yes, this is Nancy.
Okay.
I have a request for information. How many stations are doing town hall meetings? KPFD, the last one was May of last year.
Mm-hmm.
All right. KPFA, how often do you guys do town hall meetings with listener members?
There's a town hall meeting recently. I did not attend, so I don't have any specific information about it, but we did do a Zoom town hall meeting a couple weeks ago.
All right. What about KPFK? Have you guys had town meetings in recent years? Shell?
Oscar? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, we had one I think it ended up being in November, and we currently have a task force putting together the next one.
Okay. We don't have anybody from PFW. KPFT, are you guys going to do one soon?
I don't hear one cooking, but, we did one May, and the CAB organized it. And the CAB is a little bit upset that we are not implementing their, you know, suggestions that came from the members that attended that town hall meeting. They wanted us to mix music. We have music genre, usually mainly one type of music, and mainly AAA or Americana. I don't know if y'all know what that is. Anyway, I had to look it up in Google or whatever. It's a lot of, I don't know how to explain it without getting somebody in. But we have a lot of it, like almost 5 hours of it every day in the morning. And the music, of course, like I suppose the other stations, brings in a lot of money, more than the progressive shows, I'm sure, right, y'all? Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're unusual. I think PFW's like that. PFW and KPFT are unusual in that respect. From the other stations.
Really?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but Grace Aaron reported to the PNB that the music shows brought in more money than the progressive shows, and she's from KPFK. So,
all right, Sharon, do you want
to? Do y'all get y'all members? Do y'all get daily fund drive totals of each show? How much it made? Do y'all get that during the fund drive as the LSB?
All right. Let me hold on to that question for a second. Sharon, what's your comment about the town hall meeting in New York? What do you want to share about that?
Well, I was saying, like Justice and Unity had some town hall meetings. It seems like each group has their stuff going on. And I haven't heard of town hall meetings from the other side. I haven't heard of town hall meetings from the BAI itself either. When we do have town hall meetings, it's very difficult to get them advertised on the air. But people, you know, do come out and listen in to the town hall meetings. But it's the advertising and letting people know that is a big concern, and that's one of the concerns that was mentioned earlier regarding some of the other stuff, getting your messaging out so that people in the community know what's happening. I don't know when the last time we had a town hall meeting as a WBAI group. Do you?
All right.
Jim?
Well, yes, I do. I was actually calling town hall meetings when I was on the LSB precisely and we were doing it at the station, but it was being done so we could inform the listeners as to what was going on, especially when we had the station taken over. But in terms of a fully organized, everybody on board kind of town hall meeting, it's that we weren't doing, and yes, the advertisement of them basically stunk. So, it's important to have these things done. But I'm sort of curious to hear, Heather, I mean, you're hearing us talk about all this stuff. What do you guys do at WRFG out there in Atlanta?
Oh, well, thanks for asking. I was thinking we have had town hall type things in the past. We haven't been doing a lot lately, and we need to get back to that. But I think it's wonderful to have this discussion. I think it's so incredibly important to reach out to the community like this. I do want to mention, as far as the popularity of shows are concerned, one of the things I realized years ago when we had midday, we had some youth programs produced by black youth, and a lot of the black youth, would be true with white youth as well, they wouldn't necessarily have resources in the community to donate to the station. So what we realized under those circumstances is that our Good Morning Blues program in the morning took up the slack and help pay for some of the programs that wouldn't necessarily have those resources. I just wanted to mention that also. But I do think it's incredibly important. We have done that in the past quite a few times on having various events, and I'm glad you brought it up. I'm going to talk to board members. We need to start doing more of that again, particularly now. So that's all.
And Heather, you've gone to the Grassroots Radio Conference, right? Or have you been involved in that whole part of community radio?
No, I haven't, unfortunately. So I can't comment about that either. Sorry.
I'm just wondering what other examples of this in the South, like other stations like yours in other parts of the South, do you see how they deal with these kind of issues? Is there anything, best practices to learn from other stations that you've seen in your travels?
Well, I tell you what I'm going to need to do is to do more research on that and report to everyone. Unfortunately, we don't have tons of community radio stations across the South. We have some, but not enough. A few years ago, we were trying to get more of them in the South. We do have one, say, in Albany, Georgia, that was started by, I don't know if you all are familiar with Charles and Shirley Sherrod, who played a central role in the Civil Rights Movement. But anyway, they have a station down there. We have some in Mississippi. We have some that are not necessarily all that progressive, though, in Alabama. But I tell you what, though, bringing this up, I'll come up with some kind of report to share more about that with folks. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. I just want to share something.
Can
Can I mention one thing that we are doing in the South, though? And this is one of the things I'd love to be able to talk with other, with Pacifica folks about, is that I don't know if everyone is familiar with the United Nations in 2014, the end of 2014, developing the UN decade devoted to people of African descent. Are folks familiar with that?
No.
Anybody? Okay, so, well, actually, okay, the decade is going to be over on 2024, and already in the Caribbean, on the African continent, and actually here in the South, there's a group of us meeting every other week to talk about what we want to come up with, what suggestions and so forth, by the end of this decade. So we're talking about land issues, we're talking about economic issues, we're talking about all kinds of things, we're talking about reparations as well. And the reason I'm bringing this up is that I think it'd be great if some of the Pacifica folks would do some programs on the UN decade devoted to people of African descent, and I could find some folks to be interviewed along this line as well. One of the people who I talked with about this is actually Walter Rodney's wife, Pat Rodney, here in Atlanta. She's wonderful. Wow. She was telling me about what they were already doing in the Trinidad. So, or in the Caribbean area. So, but anyway, I could also report more to the committee about this. I'd love to be able to do that.
Wow, that's great. That's a great idea, Heather. Heather, I would say to you that the stuff that Otis and I are doing with the goingviral.news, I would definitely want to start. I would definitely love to incorporate that into what we're doing. That sounds like a great idea.
Wonderful.
I also want to mention, I promise you I want to do that, and I also want to mention something. I'm going to give you an example of a lost opportunity in New York, which could be created again and should be done at all the stations. About 4 or 5 years ago, a young high school senior, and in New York City we have all these different special high schools. Some of you guys may have seen the movie Fame, which was on Performing Arts High School. Well, this young lady was from the Music and Art High School. She came walking into the station and wanted to do radio. And unfortunately, somebody didn't have enough foresight and sent her packing. And one of the LSB members happened to be there, grabbed her, and asked her what she wanted to do. And she says, I want to put on a talent show of all my friends. So he went downstairs, talked to Melissa Emden, who runs the 388 Atlantic Avenue space, and about a month later, 60 to 70 teenagers come in who are going to sing, perform, play instruments, read poetry, and not only did they come from the specialized high schools in New York City, I'm talking about the Bronx Science, the Music and Art and all that stuff, but they also came from the private schools, and then they reached out to their friends in the regular public schools. So you had all these kids come in, and it was amazing. And these are the kind of opportunities that cannot be walked away from. Because I got down there, and I asked all these kids, I said, you know what, we should have all you guys come in and take over the goddamn place. Throw us out, you guys come in and take over the place. Because, you know, it's ridiculous to, you know, everybody talks a lot of bullshit about the Generation Z, we got to do this. And here we had an example right in front of our eyes of 60 kids. And so these kind of things have to now, we have to really think coming out of this COVID mess about ways to get that, you know, we not only give lip service to them, but actually have them be empowered. And that was, to me, an amazing opportunity. It was blown. And I always come back to that example because actually I had tears in my eyes, and it's hard for me to get tears in my eyes. But I was really, like, mind-blown to see all these young kids that are there that day. Anyway, so let's go to the next motion. What's your next motion, Nancy?
Hi, everyone. This is Paulina. I just joined. Sorry to interrupt.
Waited for a minute
to jump in. Yeah, sorry, just very quickly. I'm just taking a quick break. I'm producing, so I'll just hang out for a second, hopefully participate a little bit, and then later I'll catch up. Thanks.
Since you just came in, you just come in now, Paulina?
Yeah, I just came in. Well, I just heard the last 5 minutes. I'm letting you finish.
All right. Oh, you want to say something about the last 5 or 10 minutes since you just came in and you got to go back to work?
Yes. Well, I mean, I'll be around for about half an hour. So, yeah, I just wanted to say what you were saying now, Jim, is very powerful. And the argument that we're just paying lip service to youth and not actually bringing them in is that, well, they don't have disposable income. They're not, you know, they're not the backbone of our you know, of our donation base. But that's BS, because you know what grandma is not gonna give the radio $50, $100 or whatever when their precious grandchild or child or whoever is, you know, is having a space or developing something. So I think it's just the lack of foresight, maybe territoriality. Anyways, that's all.
No, and I trust me, they brought in their moms and dads, so, like, there was the guys with the wallets, so I was laughing with it. Anyway, okay, let's go to the next motion. Go on, Nancy.
Okay, I have a question about this talent show motion or agenda item. I'd like you to put it in writing, and I have a question. Did y'all audition and weed out, you know, people that you thought their act was really not good for the radio or not good enough, or did you just let everybody come on?
Yeah, first of all, we didn't bring them on the air. We had them do it live downstairs in the space.
Oh!
Second of all, none of us, they're the ones who chose who to have come on. The kids did. We had nothing to do with it. And it was such a mind-blowing thing to watch. And that's what killed me. I mean, they get a first-rate job. You know, near every city's filled with talented kids. And so it was a mind-blower. And it just says to me, we could do this again and again and again. We have to. That's we got to get this all in motion. Because my experience in doing these things is if you do a couple of these things in a row and are open and friendly with everybody, unanticipated positive opportunities come out of it. All the time. But anyway,
so,
and I'm not putting it as a motion. I'm not putting it as a motion. I'm just, like, throwing it out as what happened. That's all.
Okay, some of us will have to work it out. Then, so none of these kids got on the air?
Nope, that was the big mess about it. None of the kids got on the air, and I don't want to get over the... I don't want to talk about why that happened, because, you know, that would get into personnel issues, if you will.
That's a big disappointment. Yeah, that was a big disappointment.
Of course it was. Of course it was a big disappointment. Well, but the main thing is that it could be done again. That's the thing. Even though you have these screw-ups that happen, you can always do it again. You don't have to, you know, you can always do it again and learn from your mistakes. Anyway, go on with your emotions.
Okay, the last one was, I forgot what it was. Let me look it up. It was a real easy one and short. At the beginning of each show, announce the date and the time. I think we should do that for historical reasons, and also, let's be honest with the people. I mean, I know we're playing a lot of old archive show, but let's be honest with them. Say the date and the time at the beginning of each show. What do y'all think?
Are you
talking
about...
You mean say the date, like today is Monday? It's 3 o'clock, today is Monday? Then you go on the next day. Today is Thursday.
Today is January.
Morning.
Yeah, today is, what is it, June 28th, 2020, and it's 6:49. Anyway, to tell the people. Now, I know there's this concept, and I heard it from this lady who came to Houston to tell us how to pitch, and we had to pay for a trip. We had to pay for a hotel and everything. And she said, well, just don't keep it evergreen, so we can use it. And don't put a date. Don't say what it is. Don't talk about current events. Don't talk about the president. You know, just keep it. I think that's – I don't like that. I think we should be have really good shows, and we do have really good shows, and they might become – part of the archives and something that people in the future will be able to learn from. Put the date and the time.
All right, Paulina, excuse me, Nancy, are you saying that at KPFT, when somebody starts their show, they don't announce who they are? Are you referring to the fact that you guys have to play things now because of lack of people in the station? You have to do a lot of tape shows right now. Is that the problem?
Yeah, like one show... I was talking about Saturday, yesterday. It was, President Obama said like this. It said, well, I don't, you know, we'll look to the forward. We won't investigate the things that President Bush did bad. You know, the 2008, what was it? All that housing and all that kind of thing. Anyway,
this is
that kind of.
All right,
Oh, my.
Go on, Sandy. All right.
This is
all right.
Sandy.
Go on. Let,
this is Sandy. Yeah.
Go on, Sandy.
Hey, to that point, I'm actually editing Spare Change, the name of the show that Nancy's referring to. We are not able to get in the studio due to COVID, and not everybody has a podcast set up or a home studio. The programmer in this case does not. So it is what it is. And even, I got to say, even with, and I'm just talking from an editing standpoint, talking about a listener standpoint, even with the dated material, so to speak, a lot of what Larry Winters does in this case is very relevant and very, very cutting, given today's headlines. So, okay, yeah, we got to compromise. And as far as the date and time goes, Nancy, that's up to each programmer how they do their show. I hope they give at least the time at some point. Thank you.
All right. I got a lot to say on this issue, but let me let other people say something first. Who wants to say something on this point? Anybody else?
Paulina, sure.
Go on, Paulina.
I feel for Houston for having had to deal with and moreover pay for Christine Barzell. No visible positive effects on fundraising activity, imparting her wisdom on the guy there. But talking about requiring timestamps, I think it's problematic for shows that air nationally, so they have different times of day. That's one thing. The other thing is when you archive a show, the file carries a digital metadata timestamp. So for archival purposes, nobody's going to get confused when that show aired, if it was properly archived digitally, which is what I think everybody is doing, hopefully. And finally, of course, I agree that we shouldn't be, definitely should not be pretending that this is, especially we shouldn't be re-airing shows that were done live, especially fundraising shows where they're saying, folks, the phones are lighting up, you know, and then you realize there's nobody in the studio, you know these shows are before. It's just such an insult to our audience. I agree with that completely. So I'm not completely on board with actually requiring shows because of format reasons. And yes, we do have evergreen shows that need to be there in case somebody got sick last minute or didn't turn in their show on time. So making it mandatory doesn't make sense to me, but encouraging it, I think everybody does. We do it in, for our live show, right, because we do a live show every week, and we always say the date, you know, what time it is, and so on and so forth. But, I'm not so sure about making it mandatory or mandatory practice. That's just my two cents. Thank you.
All right, anybody else want to comment on this? Janine, I want to ask you, I have a lot of respect for the apprenticeship program at KPFA, the fact that you guys are the only station that actually has a training function for broadcasters, and I wondered what you felt about this question about IDing shows, forward-promoting shows, and all this, because I'm just sort of curious what you all do in Berkeley.
Well, we definitely ID shows and give the time, the date and the time at the top of each show. And if it's something that's re-aired, we mention that this aired on such and such a date and time. We don't always do that with the, with fundraising though. Like the last speaker mentioned, you know, when there's a tape being played, like, oh, and the phones are lighting up, we have done that before, like played, previously aired fundraising pitches, but we generally give the day and the time each show.
Yeah, my experience with this is that I know that there are shows that we play in New York that's like putting an ATM machine on, because as soon as you start that show, you'll start having people pledge. It's just remarkable. That particular show, One Marathon, made about $25,000, and it had been previously done maybe several years beforehand, so it always blows my mind. But on the issue of IDing the station, and saying, you know, you're listening to WEI Radio, blah blah blah. That to me, this is like basically broadcast 101 kind of stuff. I personally think that everybody has to be toilet trained to learn that, you know, usually a listener, an average radio listener, will turn the channel every 3 minutes if they don't like what they hear. And so I always keep that in mind. If you listen to how Morning Edition is structured, or All Things Considered, Morning Edition is a better example of that. It's always based on the ability to keep people's attention. Now, I'm not saying we need to do the same thing, but I'm talking about the form, the radio form, how it's structured, and how people listen to radio. And they will turn the channel. They surf. Now, again, the listenership is different nowadays with the new devices, with digital media, with podcasts, with everything else. It's a whole different phenomenon, and one that we also are way behind the curveball on. But my personal feeling about IDs, and I'm a big stickler for that, I think you do have to ID. You have to say what time it is. And that has to be done frequently throughout a show, or else people don't know what the hell they're listening to. I've listened to shows in BAI where everybody talks for an hour, and they never ID the show. And when you look at their actual Nielsen ratings, some of these shows have 300, 400, 500 people listening to them, so they sort of pay the price for not doing that. Forward promotion helps the whole station. And that is, you're listening to this show. We're on WBAI Radio, 99.5 FM. I'm talking to da-da-da. And coming up, the next show is Zaza. That has to be de rigueur throughout all Pacifica stations. I'm sorry, that's just broadcast professionalism, frankly. And it's been a proven practice that works. So that's my feeling about the ID issue. I'm pretty hard-nosed about that one, and pretty rigid, too. Anyway, anybody else want to comment about this? I'm sort of curious what you all do in Atlanta, Heather. What do you guys do with these kind of issues in Atlanta?
Almost every 15 minutes on our shows, we will announce this show, and we are on WRT Atlanta 89.3 FM. We do that fairly consistently. I'm saying every 15 minutes, and then at the bottom of the hour, too. So, yeah, we do that.
Yeah.
I agree that it's very important. And then also announcing the next show coming on, right? So, yeah.
Point of personal privilege, Nancy, I couldn't hear the first word that Heather said, or something is pretty important. I didn't hear the something. What is it? Heather?
Announcing the next show, you know?
Announcing
the next show. I think that's very important, too. Most of us do that fairly consistently at WRT as well. But anyway, we are announcing every 15 minutes. This is Heather Gray on this show and WRT Atlanta, whatever. So we do that, yeah.
I was on the program council at BAI in 1992. I was on it for 2 years. And, you know, sort of to sit and hear these kind of arguments discussions in 2020 is to me, like, absurd. Because we argued that everybody knew what the basis in the sound practices in broadcasting are. You have to do these kind of things. And so I think it's a weakness in the stations that these kind of things prop up again and again and again. And I frankly think it's one factor among many, why our audience has plummeted in the past 15 years, okay? That's not the main reason, but it's certainly one factor in many that has led to our audience declining, and that is the lack of attention to common sense radio practices and form, which have nothing to do with being on NPR or anything like that. It's just common sense to appeal to the listenership. It always blows my mind we have to go back to these issues. This is programming 101. Anyway, does anybody else have a comment about this issue? Okay, hearing none, let's go back to what Oscar was talking about. Have you finished everything, Nancy?
Yes, except one more thing, which I did not write.
Go on.
To remind everybody that there is a PNB mandated program committee or council. I don't know which word it was used. And it's like staff members elected by staff, LSB members elected by LSB, and listeners decided by a combination of the general manager and the LSB, and that was passed maybe 2013 or 2014, and when George Ryder was on the programming council and national committee, and it's never been enforced. We had a manager that just said no, and at a KPFT, so it never came to pass. And I think if we had following that mandate, we would have a group of people that would be able to, like, maybe take turns. I'll listen to the morning on Wednesday or on the Thursday or whatever, and so then we could kind of divide the work up and be able to listen to shows. I don't think general manager or program director can listen to everything. I mean, I just don't think it's possible. And we have a general manager at KPFT that's doing both. We don't have a program director. So a lot of things like these very important things are just being missed.
Okay. Does anybody want to comment about that? So in other words, this was a motion that went up to the PNB in that year and was
passed.
Actually formally approved?
It was approved and never implemented.
Okay. Do you have a copy of that motion?
I'll have to dig for it. Wesley was on
please dig for it, because I have motions that I'm going to send to you that were passed that have to do with the evaluation of shows. And nobody's ever done this. And again, we had a big fight with Maxie Jackson about this, because his argument was, how can you expect the PD to be spending all this time evaluating shows that are, 168 hours a week? And that was a fair point, but our argument was, you got to create some way to evaluate the shows. You have to have some standards, or who chooses the standards? And that's, of course, where everything gets screwed up, because everybody brings in their own perspectives. Yeah, go on.
This is Sandy. Thank you. We actually evaluated all of our programming at KPFT, if I go back as much as 14 years or so. A good chunk of time. We got through the whole schedule, provided feedback to shows. We had a program council that ran all of this, executed all this, working hand in glove with the current program director, who at that time was Ernesto Aguilar. So this can be done. It's a matter of effort, and I think it's really important that we do this, given that a lot of our shows don't fund. They've been there a long time on the air.
Right.
And you can see on the Pacifica streams the sparse listenership. The shows don't fund, and hey, we should be evaluating and coaching, and if necessary, replacing with updated media that provides the funding that we're looking for. Thank you.
Right. I think, and Nancy mentioned something about do the stations get hourly breakdowns of how much money each show makes? Is that was something you raised, Nancy?
Yes. Yes, we were getting until the end of 2012, and then only a few people, like Bill Crozier was getting it, and Teresa Allen was getting it, but not everybody, and that continued.
Nancy, that goes out to each and every programmer at periodically during fund drive.
I'm on the floor, Sandy.
My apologies.
Go on, Sandy.
You just got back on after being golf for 12 years or so. There are some things that you're not aware of. And so finally this year we're starting to give the fund drive totals. In fact, they even had the names of the donors, and I didn't really want that, but we've got each show and how much came in. So I'm just wondering, that is a good indication. And the shows that are doing poorly, you know what? We need to have a programming council so we can make and create some improvement. Some tools to improve. Not to say, you're not making enough money and you go out. No, they have something. So some shows could just need a little improvement. Okay, anyway, I wanted to know if the other SPs were getting the money daily.
All right. Let's take lists of so let's start with KPFA. What's your awareness, Janine, of the actual daily totals for each show in terms of fundraising during marathons?
I don't know what the number of each show makes, but we do have a system where each programmer can log in and look at the numbers. We do have like a tracking system.
And are you guys aware of, do you guys are getting Nielsen ratings. Are the individual shows or the staff in general, paid and unpaid, are you guys aware of the overall scope of the Nielsen ratings of KPFA at this point in time? Have you guys seen that data?
No. I'm not aware of Nielsen ratings.
Okay.
But I can look into that, yeah.
Okay. Let's go to Los Angeles. How KPFK guys, how aware are you of that information? Like the Nielsen ratings, the amount of money coming each day per show, how often is that data shared or critiqued or looked at?
Is somebody else on the call besides me? This is Paulina.
Yeah, Paulina. So, but I've been talking a lot, so you're welcome to make this report.
Wait, so
yeah, same thing. This is Oscar. Go ahead, Paulina. I think you have a better understanding of this issues. Please.
Okay. So maybe until up to about a year ago, for those of us who wanted to see the daily numbers, we would have to fight with our membership department for it, but you know, reluctantly we would get it. But they're not widely shared. It's not something that you can get unless you become an activist about it and ask for it. As far as the Nielsen, the general reports are shared with the local station board, and I think they're sent to programmers, but no individual hour, you know, hourly cum or you know, market share, all of those by you know, by day of the week, those numbers are not being shared with us under the pretext that we're not smart enough to understand them and that we would just run with it and politic about it. No, seriously, yeah, it's like, oh, you know, it takes a lot of knowledge to understand those numbers. We would rather digest them for you and present them to you rather than have you go through the report and then, you know, make some kind of a jump to conclusions and start rallying for a show or against the show just based on whatever you glean from with your very limited ability to understand it. Basically, that's I am being obviously very sarcastic here, but that's pretty much, you know, to tell you the truth, that's what we heard from our current PD. Now, as a board director, I think I have the right to see them, but once again, just to underscore the attitude here is, we don't need to know. There are people in charge who will figure things out for us. And also, there hasn't been any talk of evaluating programs ever since back when Alan Minsky was PD. I don't think there's a process in place for show evaluation. Maybe they have started it, but I haven't seen it evolve much with COVID. It's like, you know, things are very quiet. There isn't much communication in that sense. So that's pretty much all I know, if anybody can want to add to that.
Yeah, if I may, I definitely would like to add a couple of observations. And I don't know if this it can be, related to any other station. Here in KPFK, the general manager started to migrate the fundraising the program. I think the one before has been there for a long, long time. And at least that one of the advantages that we have, you know, at that moment, especially when we have people, actual volunteers, or a volunteer room from KPFK, which is no longer, because now it's supposed to be that we're going to have this marvelous new funding the numbers program, which in the end we don't have any way, we don't have any access. And not only that, but we are in the Spanish or in some English program, pretty much almost developed a mantra, no contestan, they don't answer, where there is people trying to, you know, to give us money, and it takes 10 minutes to get into the line. And of course, you know, what we are involved, which is our Spanish programming, will run from 8 p.m. until midnight. There is nobody on the other line. It looks like there's somebody trying to always rush for, you know, to get the money, but they don't, you know, have the knowledge of the language. And not only that, but kind of like the logistics that we used to do. and we what we think we're sometimes we're just for our wheels or just we're in the moment kind of offering different premiums and stuff, personal ideas, and I think that pretty much that is lost. And I think that's one of the reasons that here in KPFK we had really, really bad numbers. But not only that, we don't know what are those bad numbers. In the past, as Paulina mentioned, we had them posted on the wall by one of the control rooms. No longer. They stopped doing that. And just kind of, it was really funny when the general manager almost sent like a scarlet letter. These guys are not getting money. These guys are not, but we don't know because pretty much everything is on their side. So yeah, it's going to be a challenge once we have this new fundraising software running and to see if we're going to have any input. So, but yeah, just it's a particular thing on KPFK.
Michelle, do you want to add to that? Go on, Paulina.
Yeah, very, very quickly before I let Michelle jump in. So what we're referring to is the membership system that we used to use, MemSys, and we've just transitioned, or we're in the process of transitioning to Allegiance, which integrates membership with fund drive data or something to that effect. So basically it's a more integrated system, but apparently it's a whole learning curve. Our membership department is still not proficient in its use, and that's what we're being told. That's why the numbers are not forthcoming.
Michelle, do you want to add something to that?
No, I think that Paulina and Oscar spoke pretty informed manner, and I don't want to take up too much time for KPFK. I do want to flag that I have to get off in a few minutes. So if we're doing any kind of voting or anything like that, I'd love to participate. But yeah, I can't stay on for too much longer.
Well, the only thing we would do, I guess you guys have to sort of communicate among yourselves about the positions. And then, you know, I hear what Sharon says about the scheduling of a meeting. A Sunday is not that good for her. But the question is, how far in advance do you want to schedule the next meeting? Because I guess by then you'll have an idea of who wants to be what. So how? I'm just curious, just to get a poll, do you guys want to stick with Sunday right now in the time being, or do you want me to try to schedule something a week from now or 2 weeks from now? What do you think?
Nancy on the stack.
Go on, Nancy.
Yes, July 12th is open. There's nothing there. That's in 2 weeks.
What day is that?
Sunday. That's a Sunday. And we picked Sunday because it's convenient. It's the only time that Paulina and Oscar can make it. It's because they're busy all the other night. Sharon, is it possible to Sunday? Is it just absolutely bad that you cannot make it, or maybe we do move it up earlier, or Sharon?
Well, right now I have so much going on the weekend. It's difficult. That's why I was trying to see if something could happen like earlier during the week. But, yeah.
Well, like I said, this is the only time we can have Oscar and Paulina because of their, and it's not just their other private schedule, it's their work for KPFK. So we're leaning on Sunday.
All right. Well, listen, Sharon. Let me. All right.
Well, that just means that I just probably won't be able to attend some meetings. I just won't be able to make it.
All right. Go on, Nancy.
If it's moved up a little bit earlier, would that help, Salam? Because they can come earlier.
They can come earlier, you say?
Yes, they can come earlier, but not later.
I got 9 o'clock. Can they come at 9 o'clock?
Nine in the morning?
Yeah, I'm up at 5. Oh, yeah, 9. The rest of my day to plan and do other stuff.
Which time zone are we talking about?
No.
We're talking about 12 o'clock East Coast. 12 o'clock East Coast time on a Sunday. 9 o'clock West Coast.
Is that what time we're talking about? 12 o'clock East Coast?
That's right.
Oh, I didn't know.
Well, if you do 9 o'clock East Coast, then it's like, what is it? It's like 6 a.m. in the morning?
Six. Oh, no, forget. Yeah, forget about it. Yeah, they're not going to get it.
So if it's 9 o'clock out there, if it's 9 o'clock wherever, what would that make it East Coast time? Would that make it
noon? Noon.
That make it 12 o'clock. 12 o'clock.
Noon?
12 o'clock. Are you going to, well, is 12 o'clock good for you on a Sunday, Sharone, or not?
Maybe 2.
How's 2 o'clock for you guys? That's 10 o'clock East Coast, West Coast time?
12 and 1 and around in there, that's like a religious time. So that kind of interferes with that.
All right, so is 2 o'clock East Coast time good for you guys in California?
So 11 a.m. Pacific time?
Right, right. How's that?
As long as it's not the third Sunday of the month, because that would conflict with the LSD.
I concur. As long as it doesn't go into our LSD a regular meeting, it can work. Yeah.
When is your next LSD? Our LSDs are the third Sunday of the month.
Third, okay. July 12th is the second. How about that?
I think that's okay with me personally, just myself.
All right. Is that okay? Is that okay with Janine? Is that okay with you? That early in the morning on a Sunday?
Yes, that's fine.
Is that good? So, okay. And what about everybody else?
Oh, this is Wally. I got knocked off the call.
Oh,
Wally. Oh, Wally.
Yeah.
We're talking
so at
about
11. 11 o'clock Central Time?
It would be 12 o'clock Central Time. We'd be doing it 2 o'clock East Coast Time. 2 o'clock
well,
East Coast
o'clock.
Time, which would be...
Oh, yeah, it'd be 1 o'clock our time. Yeah, that would be that'd be
okay.
Fine.
Okay, so let's set it up on the 12th of July for 2 o'clock East Coast Time. How's that, okay?
Jim, can you
any
do
objections?
That for us?
I'll do that, yes. 2
okay.
O'clock East Coast Time. On the 12th of July. Okay, very good. All right, so we got that settled. Okay, so Michelle, if you want to split, just split.
I think we should adjourn.
If I can, real quick, I'm really heartened by this, and I appreciate the meeting and the earnestness with which people are approaching the work. And I want to give a big, super giant shout out to Jim for really facilitating us through this process. And you've been a big help the last few months, Jim, in ways that you didn't necessarily have to. And so, I'm excited for a new phase for this committee.
Yeah, no,
thank
I
you,
think, as I say, this is very important for this committee to function well and for the knowledge that we have to be passed into you guys. But anyway, I don't want to adjourn yet because I think Oscar had a point to make and we hadn't finished. So, and I also wanted to ask Heather what her understanding about, you know, how do you guys evaluate shows in a radio station in Atlanta?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I was sitting here thinking about it. I think I probably mentioned this at one of the Pacifica meetings. Yeah, it's hard for us to assess. Of course, people tend to assess programs based on the money that they raise, right? But the programs raise. But I want to tell you, years ago, when I was doing, because WRG is like a lot of the Pacifica stations, I'm sure, where we have a variety of programs, and so the audience changes sometimes from hour to hour. But I decided that I would explore where we were getting our money from. And so I looked at the addresses of all of the donors in the Atlanta area, and it was so interesting because I found that the donations were coming from three specific zip codes, right? And so I looked at those three specific zip codes by looking at other data, and what I found is that these were the only zip codes in the entire state of Georgia that donated to the Democratic Party in Georgia. So, it's very interesting. So I wanted to share that with you all. I mean, because that stressed a lot of our programming, certainly, and the interest that the Democrats would have, I guess. So it was just fascinating. It is hard to get this assessment. But I will say, though, that WRFG, and I know there's been a big discussion about underwriting, not at Pacifica stations, but we do underwrite. And I need to say that a few years ago, there was somebody who said to me, I would be eternally grateful to WRFG, because were it not for WRFG, I would not have known about our small business in East Atlanta. And I don't want to belabor this point. Maybe we can talk about this at some other time, but I think that small businesses, not the huge corporate entities, but small businesses are wonderful partners for community radio. So I just wanted to mention that also.
That's a great point, because looking at how small businesses are getting clobbered with this terrible thing going on, that I think is going to hurt us down the road. It's a very important point. Sharon, do you want to comment about this? Your awareness of how shows are evaluated, what you think about it?
You muted? Sharon, are you muted?
Sharon. Yeah, yes. Sharon. You want to comment about that?
Well, I have found that we have a very weak way of evaluating shows and anybody else that's within the Pacifica network. And it doesn't seem to be a solid mechanism for evaluation. I guess the major thing is how much money you're bringing in. So if you're not bringing in any money, your time gets cut, your show gets cut, you get flipped, you get flopped. You know, a lot of things start to happen. But then we also don't have a mechanism for evaluating. We don't really have a mechanism for assisting people in making the necessary improvements to bring things back into line. And that's from the top down. We just don't have that mechanism in place. Maybe some other stations do, where they give feedback to the various people who are producing the program. You know, like from the GM down, we just don't have that mechanism in place at this moment.
Right.
It's something we need to work on and start trying to see how we can help those people who are at the stations trying to do various work do the best they can with their time and with the programming that they're trying to put out.
Okay. Ralph, are you still on the
phone? No, I'm just saying
Ralph,
you still
have
problems with it.
Oh, absolutely. Ralph, are you on the phone? Ralph, are you on the phone? Ralph? Are you listening, Ralph?
He said he didn't have juice in his phone.
Okay. All right. Look, this is the issue that I've been spending the past 25 years thinking about. And first of all, it's inexcusable that people trying to evaluate the way this... Ralph, did you get on the phone? Is that you? All right. It's inexcusable that people trying to evaluate how the stations survive, and that's what we're in right now. We're very lucky we got the PPP money, and I understand there are two other loans, an SBA loan and money from the state of California coming in. But my problem all the time is that and I say this as someone who's a loyal, you know, I'm the whole mission of BAI and the Pacifica stations I'm very fanatically loyal to, but I am not fanatically loyal to us not evaluating ourselves critically. The reason I personally think, one of the main reasons why we got into this terrible mess with the back payments of the Empire State Building, was we weren't paying attention to what was working and not working. And that's where I share the criticisms of people from the Bay Area on New York. But where I don't agree with them is that the issue of how to improve it is something that I personally put the blame on everybody involved. because number one, you don't get the there's ridiculous assumptions about the streaming data. The streaming data we get allows us to hear in real time how many people are actually listening on the streams. In New York, the ratio is usually a 10-to-1 ratio to the Arbitron data. The Arbitron data, Nielsen data, it's not the silver bullet, but what is a silver bullet is how much money is made. And when you have a show on that, let's say, only has 300 or 400 people, it's just a matter of mathematics. How many people are going to subscribe? And in the New York City stations, you know, when you have this constant, you know, it's like day to day, what paycheck to paycheck. And always the problem with the premiums being sent out is a premium problem, as far as a cash flow problem. And where's the cash come from? It comes from people deciding to send their money in to subscribe to the list and to be listener members. And if they don't like what they're listening to, they're going to vote with their wallets and their credit cards. So the issue of inputs, which I, you know, Sharon and I would have different opinions about this. I personally think we but I agree with her on the intern issue, the educational issue. We have to have at every station a good relationship with the universities in our signal area that can provide us help, that can provide us resources that we lack, that can provide us inputs into training and creating skill levels among our broadcasters. Too often people are put on the air. The assumption is that this person has a right-on political issue to talk about or whatever, and then they're left alone, and they're not worked with. And the reason they're not worked with is there's not enough people to work with them to start with. So that, I think, and that's why I admire what goes on at KPFA with the training program. I've talked to people involved with that. It's a good model to emulate in all the stations. But the inputs of being involved in the wider arts community of the city that you're in, we are not in that position in each signal area. Certainly in New York, not to the extent we are in New York. We're in the most exciting cultural center in the United States. And I say that unabashedly and factually as a New Yorker, but also as someone who, that's a fact. We're not involved in that excitement the way we should be. And so I think that hurts us. And then when I go out to these demonstrations, overwhelmingly, these young kids don't know anything about Pacifica or BAI, and that's on us. That's the burden on us to change that. So, but I think it's important for people to get the information and be honest in evaluating it, because too often it's used as a weapon to go attack different people and say, "Oh, look at you! You're not making any money. Like, hey, you're out of here." And sometimes, frankly, some people should be out of here. You know, if someone's been on the air for 30 years and they only have 300, 400 people listening to them, I don't know what to say. There has to be a change. That's why I'm in favor of the digital stuff, because at least that gives flexibility. At least that allows us to create other kinds of vertical and horizontal forms of listening that we don't have anymore. We don't have, that we could have, if we were trying to be involved in the cutting edge of social media. You'll see with the resolutions, we fought a lot about this. A lot of what you guys say, we've argued. And the key thing I think all of us share is the desire to see this alternative broadcast institution flourish and work. That's my feeling about it. And that's why, you know, I just am committed to that 100%. In any event. Oscar, let's go to what you were talking about, then we'll close it off. Like, Oscar, so why don't you repeat a little bit about the ideas you had, and then we'll sort of end the meeting at that point with a comment about what you were talking about.
Go on, yeah, Oscar. In general. Hi, guys. Yeah, just kind of in closing, the idea will be, as we're mentioning in a few times, the programming, the quality, and the interaction with the community is what is going to save us all. So, because different experience that we're really having, especially in this time, I feel, you know, really, really frustrated because, and probably most of you, because we had a big, big opportunity to be relevant, to be, you know, in close with the community, to be people pretty much can turn to a Pacifica station for the information that they require. And pretty much we're losing to, as you mentioned, to NPR. I had two instances where here in California, where pretty much we dropped the ball. I pretty much I put it out there personally because it was really, really upsetting. One of those, just kind of an example of what we can do if we were doing in the right places. When I got here one the first evening or the curve of the curfews, there was I was coming from San Francisco to Los Angeles, and I turned into KTSK to figure out if by any chance there was somebody talking about the really important, the first night of the curfews here in LA, here in California, and there was none. I turned to the local NPR station, which is pretty much next or next to KPFK, and they were covering, you know, wall to wall, and it was really upsetting for me, that point one. So while in the meantime, I've been in contact with a lot of people who at that moment were protesting on City Hall and Long Beach, different areas where we could have a lot of voices just kind of keeping into, you know, into KPFK. Well, at that moment, it's a music show. They're playing, and unfortunately, as somebody mentioned, probably that kind of, I relate to that, probably that Americana kind of style, you know, old-fashioned, or a little bit, you know, maybe not relevant to the moment. So my proposal is pretty much to make a Pacifica option where pretty much is Pacifica in the streets, or whichever station, in this case, KPFK, in the streets. Or in Spanish, you know, vamos a las calles, Pacifica en las calles, o KTSK en las calles, where we could figure out a mechanism and that it could be offered and almost pushed into the program directors, where, let's say, in certain times of the day, we have 2 minutes or 3 minutes where either we can pretty much just deputize ourselves as either as a, you know, the programmers or volunteers or whoever is in some way related to KPFK, even listeners. Pretty much just the model of breaking news without having a news team that we don't have most of the time out on the street. Just make the community see our voice outside in the community. Of course, the process can be a little bit not difficult, but it should be a process. But the main thing it will be to open that connection to the community, where if somebody has a breaking news or something interesting to say in a particular moment, whoever of us can be and we can be relevant, we can have the trust that we can call our Pacific station and put it out to the producer or to the board operator or whoever is at the moment. Hey, this is important, and then on the understanding that we that there is almost like a public space, you know, for people to call. I think that will be kind of the all around idea, and then everybody of yours, of course, can you know, put their 2 cents into it. Thank you.
Any comments on this idea? Go on, Nancy.
Yes, somebody please mute if you're not talking.
Oh, they quit. Go on, Nancy. What are you going to say about this? You want to say something about this?
No. I think we should adjourn. I don't want people to burn out. And this meeting started 20 minutes late, and so I think we should adjourn and maybe continue the conversation on email. And then I would like Oscar's motion in a written form, if possible.
All right. Let me just say something about what Oscar said. First of all, it is sort of painful to have us have to talk about this. I was talking with the former general manager of KPFA, Andrew Phillips, who used to be the PD at BAI. And whenever something like this happens, we should essentially move a Comrex out into an event and cover it live. The hell with people wanting to do their shows. Here's a real live event going on with immense importance to everybody. And we should basically be going to that and putting it on the air. And that's it, period. And it's just, I guess part of it kills me to have these debates about this, because that's really the most exciting radio that the Pacific ever did, was covering these kind of events live. And so it's to me, a no-brainer. We just got to, you know, we got to get past this culture of like, okay, you know, you're on and you're doing your show, and, you know, we want to respect the fact that you're doing your show, and we don't want to disrupt your time, and, oh, we're going to only squeak in just talking about, you know, the implications of George Floyd's death and all the things going on, and we're only going to do 3 minutes. To me, we just simply should move these guys into a digital form and just go straight at it. Put on the Comrex. What is going on in the streets? We should have moved the Comrex out to City Hall in New York and stayed there for at least 4 or 5 hours. Have people come and talk about what the hell's going on, because that is what's happening. And so I agree with you, Oscar, 100%. And so in light of what does anybody want to talk about that? Are you guys want to adjourn at this point, and we'll talk about it coming in the next meeting? All right. I don't hear anything. Okay, all right. Yeah, go on. Who's going to say something? Yep.
All right. Yes, I do. Right. I do. I will agree to that, and we can keep this conversation by email or by the thread that is decided. But again, it's just kind of to hear opinions and suggestions. But again, yeah, I completely agree with you, Jim, that it's painful not to have this connection, and something has been, whether we have come to it, not thinking about it, and, you know, and every time somebody new getting into age.
Yeah, All right. And you got to remember, I'm a historian, so that's where I'm coming from. History is important to me. Anyway, listen, let's bid everybody a good adieu. Thanks. We got a meeting finally off the ground. I'll set it up for July 12th at 2 o'clock. And great having everybody on. Thanks for everybody participating tonight. It was wonderful to hear everybody talk.
Thank you, everybody. We need you again to make quorum.
We got quorum. We got to get quorum. Okay. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye. Regards, everybody.
Bye.
All right.